And now it's time to chat to our legal eagle on duty. And our topic today is all about fraud and money laundering. Kwenge, good morning. Welcome to the show. I'm standing in for Peter Allam this morning. Welcome and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, sir. How are you this morning?
Very, very well, thank you. And I hope that you're good on your side. Nice to chat to you again. The topic today, fraud and money laundering and all the crimes that go with it.
Yes, sir. Fraud and money laundering is a growing crime in South Africa. In fact, it's growing globally, where it's become quite a problem. And people actually find themselves in situations where they shouldn't have been, which is very unfortunate. What members of the public don't know is that the minimum, the minimum sentence or the minimum amount of money that you need to actually commit through fraud or money laundering is 500,000.
Mm-hmm.
If you take anything above 500,000, then the minimum sentence is applicable of 15 years.
Okay.
When members of the public are faced with court proceedings and they find out that you're facing 15 years, some actually do collapse in court, believe it or not. It is quite a serious thing. And what people don't know about money laundering, and I will describe what money laundering is. There is a term where generally people watching series or they're watching movies where they say cleaning money.
Yes.
So the term cleaning money is that people can make money from proceeds of crime, where we've seen in South Africa a lot of people will commit crimes such as the SBV, those money trucks. So what people do, they will bomb those trucks, take undisclosed amounts of money. So that's where now money laundering is about to start. So hypothetically speaking, let's say you take 500,000.
Mm-hmm.
For 500,000, all cash. And you look at your mate, who could be owning, let's say, a car dealership. You go to him, you give him the 500,000.
And you then buy a car.
He will, yes, then he'll take the money. Instead of disclosing what the money is for or where the proceeds of the money came, he's not going to do that. So money laundering becomes a problem. And then it's described in four things. It's money or property that one should have known where the proceeds came from. So FICA has decided to strengthen the rules. So FICA is the Financial Interpretation Act, where they've decided to be more strict. So for example, if you're trying to buy a property in South Africa right now, you have to give your ID. You have to obviously tell them where you got the money.
Right.
You cannot just come with large amounts of money and just deposit and say, I'm buying a house. Cash. You have to. It's what we're doing as a country to try combat money laundering. However, they're not moving quick enough. You know?
So in other words, what you're saying is, you know, like this is the type of scene that would probably play out in the movies, but it actually cannot or shouldn't happen in real life in South Africa, is I can't rock up at your car dealership with a suitcase full of 200 Rand notes and say, I want that Ferrari. Because if I do that, well, I can do that, but you're obliged by law to report it and say, listen, that guy has just arrived here with a suitcase full of money. He wants to buy a car. I'm declaring this transaction so that it can be investigated. And the first thing they'll probably do is ask me where I got the suitcase of money.
Well, you know, so, believe it or not, it still happens, which is very unfortunate. There's a case that we're currently busy with now where what they do is that they get members from SARS. So by law, you have to, if you own a business or you working for a business, so some people either get an accountant or they do it themselves. So what they do, the members from SARS contact you, and it's through like a friend or someone whistleblows and says, okay, there's this person who's been doing tenders. And we know in South Africa, tenders can go all the way where things are not actually done properly.
Yeah, that's another topic altogether.
Yeah, so what happens there is that the members from SARS will contact you and say, okay, listen, we need you to come to our offices. And then you go to SARS as a normal human being, you know nothing. And then they ask you, have you filed your returns? Obviously, they know you haven't because they've seen in the system. And you'll say, no, I haven't. Then they will do it on your behalf. And you obviously meet them at SARS, so you think everything is legit. And then it turns out, after then they'll say they will take 20% from the case that you're doing. They took 20%. They gave the person 1.8 million. So you pay 20%. After about 3 months, then they flag your account. The minute it's flagged, you get shocked because, I mean, you think, I met people from SARS, you know? So then it becomes a problem. So that's what in South Africa people need to know. And funny enough is that people don't understand that you can finish 1.8 million in literally 3 months. Because by the time you need to get an attorney, you literally have nothing in the bank, you know? So it is a problem.
Right.
And unfortunately, people end up falling in terms for racketeering where they will try bribe or extort. So once you caught, so for example, the case now of a former South African referee who was charged of misappropriating funds of about 15 million. His bail, him and his wife, his bail was 50,000. So that's what people also need to know. The courts also look at the amount that you've actually, like in terms of money laundering or fraud or corruption. So they do look at the amount that you've stolen, and then they will obviously charge you a substantial amount for bail if you meet the bail conditions, obviously.
Yes.
So people need to, which is bad advice from an attorney, but don't finish the money. do save for rainy days.
And you know, commercial crimes are also on the increase in South Africa. You know, you hear stories of there was one in the news some time back where I think it was a bursar of one of the schools somewhere in the Eastern Cape sort of, shall we call it, doing creative accounting and managing to siphon funds off. And I mean, it happens in businesses as well, you know, where letters go out changing banking details. So all of a sudden people end up putting money into the wrong bank accounts.
Well, that's so if you get a message, for example, from an attorney or an email, you'll see at the bottom there is disclaimers to say that if we will not change bank accounts or bank details, we will not send via SMS, you know, like we'll obviously confirm. It's to prevent such criminal activity. And what people don't understand is that, like you said, now you mentioned with bursars. So what happens with bursars is that someone could be employed from 2000 and then they've been stealing the money and then they only get caught in 2025. So, and then the minute you caught, so every transaction that you make, that's a count, you know? So even if you transfer 10 rand and then tomorrow you transfer another 10 rand, it is a count, and you find yourself in situations where you're facing over approximately like 300,000 counts, you know, because you've done it over a long period of time, which becomes a problem. And unfortunately, even if one would remember Jacob Zuma case where, well, still not finished. He's also got a lot of counts, you know, because you do corruption, fraud over a period of time, you know. So that's what people don't understand. People think they just put the money together and say, okay, this is how much you've stolen. However, the court considers every transaction, you know. So that's what members of the public need to know. I obviously wouldn't advise taking money, obviously.
No way. When that sort of amounts to fraud and forgery, of course, you've also got, and you mentioned Jacob Zuma. Here we're talking corruption allegations. You know, And I'll never forget the words of, I think it was Judge Hillary Squires, if I'm not mistaken, the judge that listened to the Shabir Sheikh case. And he ruled that there was a generally corrupt relationship between Shabir Sheikh and the companies. So yeah, you know, there and Zuma, we're still waiting for that case to come through. But corruption being another one that gets its fingers in. You mentioned earlier also about tenders. I mean, that's where corruption is rife.
Well, definitely. And then what happens in tenders is that people are dishonest. Obviously, South Africa is faced with vast unemployment, and people see corruption as a get-rich-quickly scheme where you even find yourself promised incentives. Also, you promise. So some people say, okay, if I get the job, and then I'll be able to give something back to you. There was an interesting case that's still ongoing with the VBS, which is in Limpopo. So what happened there, there was a gentleman who was a chartered accountant. However, what he did is that the minute he became a chartered accountant, so he called all his mates, and then he was channeling through to his family, including what people do, including your mother, could be friends as well. Mm-hmm. So you send them money. He was sending his mom close to R1 million every month. However, now that they caught and they're still going through proceedings, he's saying that his mom was not aware. But I think within the law, if you receive more than 50,000 in your account, you have to disclose.
Yes.
You know? So you cannot say, no, I don't know. I didn't know where the proceeds came from. You know?
Right. So if suddenly that amount of money arrives in your account, you've got to go to the bank and say, look, you know, something's happened, or, you know, declare it at SARS. It would be an income. I mean, there's any number of routes that probably legally should be followed.
Yes, no, definitely. The bank can flag you. However, I think the proper and reasonable thing to do is you approach them first, you know, and then obviously there's implications such as tax and things that one needs to consider instead of letting them come to you. Because the minute they come to you, then it's already a problem. And we've obviously seen in the news with crimes that relate to money laundering and fraud that a crime could have happened, like the soccer referee that I mentioned. He was given the money in 2008, which is approximately close to 15 years ago, you know. So one thing people need to know is that if you commit a crime, especially with fraud, and they can come back, because at any time they will do, they'll obviously appoint someone to go through your books, you know, and then they could find problems. But most people say with the matters that we're doing currently is that the clients always blame the accountant. However, law says that if you make excuses of not knowing, then the problem is with you. You know, so you cannot be ignorant and say, I was unaware. Because what SARS do with e-filing, they give you the password, they give you the details. So with your account, so one needs to go for short courses to make themselves familiar. You cannot just say, my accountant did this, because most people actually even file forgery documents. So they'll be claiming money, and then SARS will say, produce the receipt that, and then they'll obviously file. And sometimes the accountant will give you, and then, or you'll say to the accountant, they must sign on your behalf, which is also a problem. I think you should always read, and it's always important to also sometimes get attorneys involved to read on your behalf, you know, because the minute you found, you know, to be guilty of, like I said, if it's over 500,000, you're looking at 15 years. And it's always best if you still do have the money to offer to pay a certain portion. And what people also tend to forget is that even if you try to commit fraud or SARS by submitting a fraudulent document and you get caught before you actually get the money, they look at how much you, so if you submit fraudulent documents to get 15 million, for example, you'll be charged as if you've taken the 15 million. So you cannot say, no, I didn't get the money, you know. So people need to be careful, yes.
Well, I think at the end of the day, just don't do it. You know, we talking here, you know, the consequences of these things are pretty serious. And the worst part is that it ends up being a long, drawn-out court battle, which could take years. So you actually put your life on hold while these charges are pending, you know, because it'll take years and years for you to either be able to prove your innocence or for the state that matter to prove you guilty.
Yes, well, if you look at trying to obtain a court date in Johannesburg currently, they say you're looking at about 2031. One matter that we're doing now, they sent a summons back in 2018, and only now we're about to go to trial. So
sure,
7-8 years, you know.
It's a long, drawn out process. No, and so at the end of the day, the moral of the story is, you know, don't get involved in those types of things. And I think at the end of the day, if there's something that you're suspicious of, maybe, you know, for talking from the point of view of being a victim of fraud, potential fraud, money laundering or whatever, you know, if it's a deal that seems too good to be true, then there's a pretty good chance that it is.
Yes, and obviously there's many platforms for someone to whistleblow. You know, we've got a lot of people, for example, creating. One would obviously need to look at things like instant payments. There's a platform now which a lot of people try to sell things, such as Facebook Market. And even at Facebook Market, it's always best if you could obviously meet with the person face to face, go to police station where you can exchange. It's always better to keep money at hand, funny enough, which is not always advisable with crime in South Africa. However, if you're going to send money without verifying with the person that this person is actually legit, then the problem is with you. And unfortunately, the banks, they do look at negligence from your side as well. You know, as much as you can claim that someone has fraudulently extorted money from you, however, if you didn't do the due diligence and then you just sent money to an account that's been active on Facebook for about, let's say, 2 months.
Yeah.
And obviously you also contributed to it.
You need to be very, very careful. And Kwenge, you know, if somebody, for instance, is they're concerned that they might be approached or they are wanting to have something checked out, could they contact yourselves at Alam's Attorneys? And if so, how do they get in touch?
Well, people can always find us at number 6 Sansom Road in Vincent. That's a small street, which it's in the same street as Pep Stores. They can contact us on 043-721-1018, which is available all the time. However, they can also contact us on Facebook as well, and we'll respond immediately, which is 24 hours. So
right.
Anytime they encounter any situations, they can just send a message and then we'll
And you'll
respond.
Follow through. Kwenge, thank you very, very much for the chat this morning, and keep well. Looking forward to chatting again sometime.
Thank you. Cheers.
Thanks a lot. There we go. That's Kwenge from Alam's Attorneys today with today's Legal Eagle Chat: money laundering, commercial crime, fraud.